latest breaking news stories, visit the ACB Radio newsroom at www.acbradio.org. All the news, all the time. From the world's leading news organisations like CNN, the BBC, the New York Times, the Toronto Star, the Wall Street Journal, and more. That's all the news, all the time, in the ACB Radio newsroom at www.acbradio.org.
As well as ACB Radio Mainstream,
The Cafe,
ACB Radio Treasure Trove,
you can hear
live and predictable internet
on the ACB Radio Interactive.
ACB Radio Interactive,
playing music from
the 1930s and 40s,
the 50s and 60s,
the 1970s,
80s and 90s,
the hits of the new millennium.
ACB Radio Interactive comes to you from at least six time zones on three continents, bringing you the very best of
country,
top 40,
classic and modern rock,
new age,
folk,
the rare stuff out of the 50s,
jazz,
easy listening adult contemporary,
and more. Live, unpredictable internet radio.
ACB Radio Interactive.
ACB Radio.
Yes, remember us. This is ACB Radio Mainstream. I'm Jonathan Mosen, and this is Blind Line, the original interactive talk show exclusively for the blind and vision impaired. It's a pleasure to have you along at this slightly earlier time of 2200 UTC, but I see by the listener count that a number of you have found us anyway, and that's very good news. And on the program, well, it'll be your chance to sound off and have your say about anything that you would like to after our interview, which I'll tell you about in just a moment. And I want to get you thinking about what we're going to talk about today, because I thought that we could have a bit of a chat about what's good about being blind. Unusual topic, perhaps. But, you know, we do talk on this program and on email lists, as we quite rightly should, about the challenges that blindness poses. And we talk about ways of overcoming those challenges. We talk about overcoming stereotypes in the workplace. We talk about accessibility issues. But is there an upside to being blind? Do you sometimes think, well, I'm glad I'm blind because... There you go, there's a challenge for you. Look on the bright side of life, as Monty Python would say, and tell us what you think is good about being blind, if you can. Of course, you're welcome to raise any other subject you like as well, and that'll be all coming up in the open forum part of the program in just a little while. But first, we're going to be hearing from Jim Layton of the Radio Information Service in Belleville, Illinois. We like it when Jim lets us have access to some of his interesting interviews, and he does many. And, of course, we should also thank Michael Loff, who does all of the digitization for us in these cases. Jim sends the tapes to Michael, and Michael does all of the donkey work in terms of making them an MP3 file and getting them to us. So we appreciate the team, that is Jim and Michael, who make this material available to us. An interesting subject today. It's a subject that is of considerable interest to people who I think have degenerative conditions of the eye. And I really do think there is a difference in mindset between those who perhaps have been born blind, maybe even between those who are born blind and those who have gone blind, completely blind very suddenly, and those who do have congenital conditions that are degenerative, or perhaps conditions that they've acquired that are degenerative, because it must be quite soul-destroying when you think about it to have a condition that slowly eats away at your ability to see. And sometimes the deterioration is so gradual that you don't always appreciate that your vision is deteriorating. And there are a lot of those sorts of conditions. I guess retinitis pigmentosa is the most well-known of those conditions. And there's a lot of research that's been going on into those sorts of conditions. And Jim Layton today speaks with someone who's at the forefront of that kind of research. And we're going to be hearing about research that's been done on a dog, in this case, who has a retinal condition. And it's been somewhat successful. Now, Jim has also emailed me a bit of an update about this, which I'll share with you after the interview. But let's cross to Jim Layton now, and he can tell you more.
Hello, everyone. Jim Layton here. And today we have the unique opportunity to talk with an individual who's involved in some exciting eye research Recently, a group of dogs that were blinded by retinal disease now can see due to gene therapy. Joining us is Associate Professor of Ophthalmology at the University of Pennsylvania, Dr. Gene Bennett. Dr. Bennett, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Wonderful to be there.
Doctor, before we get into your research, tell us a little bit about the person behind the research. Who is Dr. Gene Bennett?
Well, first of all, let me tell you that this was actually a collaborative effort with scientists from three different centers, and I'm just one of the lucky people who happens to be one of those scientists. I am a scientist at University of Pennsylvania at Shea Eye Institute, which is a department of ophthalmology here, and I'm in the F.M. Kirby Center for Molecular Ophthalmology there. I'm a bench scientist, but I also have an M.D., so I'm familiar with the diseases. And my work is very much geared towards developing a treatment for blinding eye diseases.
And part of that work in the university then leads to what you're doing with the dogs, is that correct?
Exactly, yes. We've been trying various strategies to try to treat such blinding diseases, and using different animal models, we actually use the dog because it is a model for probably the most severe form of blinding disease, one which affects children and infants. It's a disease called Leber congenital amaurosis, and these dogs have the same disease as what the children with Lebers have.
Now, do we know what causes Leber's, and could you describe a little bit more what it exactly is and who it affects?
Sure. Well, Leber's is a disease which affects infants. In fact, parents are usually the ones who first identify the problem. They notice that when their babies are 1 or 2 months old that they're not looking at things and following objects or people with their eyes, that instead their eyes have wandering movements. They wander all over the place, and that's because no signal is getting from the retina to the brain and back again to hold the eye in place. And typically the parents bring the child to the pediatrician who sends them to an ophthalmologist, and the diagnosis is made. And there's little to do after that point. There's no treatment for the disease. And so the kids are destined to go to schools to learn how to read Braille and use canes and guide dogs and so forth. And there's no hope, really, until now, for them to obtain any useful vision. The disease, it's actually a group of diseases, and we know that just from recent work in the past few years, a number of genes which, when mutated, can cause the disease have been identified. There are now about 5 different genes known to contribute to this disease. And the one that we've been working with is called RPE65, and that gene controls the supply of a vitamin A derivative to the cells in the retina, which actually begin the whole process of vision.
No, I was going to ask you about RPE65. A group of people in 1997 discovered that mutated gene. How did that play in the role in what you're doing with the dogs?
It was key. In fact, everything that we've done is built on scientific progress just in the past few years and even the past decade, because we're building on multiple findings from different investigators. And the one you speak of is definitely critical. The one which identifies the role of the specific gene in this form of the disease, because that also led to identifying the gene defect in a specific breed of dogs, which is known to be blind, and also allowed people, other scientists, in particular Michael Redman at the NIH, to generate a genetically engineered mouse with the same disease. So, in other words, identifying the defect in the humans has allowed us to look at animals and identify those that have the same disease, and also to generate additional models such as mice for study and testing potential treatments.
Let's talk about the dogs themselves for a second. How many are you using, and why the Briard dogs? What's so special about them?
Well, the mutation was first identified in this Briard dog strain, which was a group of dogs identified in Sweden. And so we're really limited to our therapeutic evaluations to this strain of dog because it's the only one which is known to have this particular gene defect. How many dogs? Well, we have so far studied 4 dogs. Only 3 of them have we treated, and in those we've treated the right eye with our experimental treatment and the left eye with control. And all those dogs are alive, doing well, and the treated ones are seeing with their treated eyes.
So let's talk about the treatment itself. Kind of walk us through it. Give us kind of a step-by-step detail of what you did, and we'll talk about the results.
Well, there are two main ingredients. First, we need to be able to deliver the corrective gene into the defective cells. And the way that we have done that is to utilize a recombinant virus, which in fact piggybacks the therapeutic gene into the target cells. DNA doesn't ordinarily cross over cell membranes, and so the trick has been to use this virus to bring it across the cell membrane and get it to the target cell efficiently. That's the first step. And the other step is to combine that with a surgical procedure, which is used every day by human retinal surgeons, and that is to take a very fine needle to inject the recombinant virus into the space which borders the cell layer that we're trying to target. And this causes a local retinal detachment, which allows the virus and its corrective gene to bathe the targeted cells, and it prevents the virus from leaking to other parts of the eye or to other parts of the body. Now, unlike the traumatic retinal detachments that some of you may have heard, your listeners may have heard about, this detachment resolves very quickly. In fact, within an hour or so, the fluid within that area is resorbed by the bordering cells and the retina flattens out and there's no sign of any surgical manipulation at all. So those are the two ingredients.
And once you got the results you were looking for, how did you measure that? How did you know the dogs could see? Did you set up a maze? How did that work?
We actually didn't expect to see a dramatic result. We expected to see something that we'd have to detect by computer averaging and so forth. So our first sets of experiments involved electrophysiological measures where you can measure the electrical activity of the retina after it's exposed to light. And typically these dogs, when they're untreated, have essentially flatline electrical activity. However, we were really surprised and thrilled when we saw that the treatment had actually restored the pattern of electrical activity to the retina to essentially normal levels. And we did several tests such as this. And then we realized when we were talking to the animal caretakers who spend a lot of time working with these animals, the animal caretakers said to us, you know, when I'm going around the room and adding food or water or to the dog's cages or checking on them or doing procedures, those dogs that you treated are watching me, which is amazing because these dogs normally can't see anything. They're not looking at somebody moving around and being able to follow them. And we realized, hey, this treatment is really dramatic. These dogs are seeing. And so we did some behavioral studies where we put the animals through an obstacle course where there were different objects around the room just to test their ability to navigate around this maze. And in fact, they avoided bumping into objects with their treated eyes and bumped on the side which was untreated.
So it was the caretakers themselves that brought it to your attention.
Exactly.
Now, when you realized that the dogs could see, what were your thoughts and reactions about that? I mean, you've had a lot of time invested in this. What were your thoughts?
Well, I was just thrilled, as were my collaborators. All of us were so excited, and we're still equally excited. This is really a once-in-a-lifetime sort of experience for a scientist. You hardly ever get results this dramatic. And so, of course, our first thought was, well, we better repeat this and make sure it's really real, just to assure ourselves that this was indeed what was happening, and indeed it is. And we have continued to follow the animals over time to make sure that the effect is still lasting, and it is. So where does this go? Well, obviously, the implication is that, first of all, we have restored vision to a dog which is blind, which is dramatic in itself and promises great things for people with dogs who suffer this problem. But you can also think that perhaps this treatment could one day be extrapolated to treat humans with the disease and prevent a lifetime of blindness for children, say, which is just an extraordinary possibility in my mind. And those are the thoughts that we're having now, and we've actually embarked on a series of studies to optimize the treatment and make sure that the effect is long-lived so that that we can ultimately end, and also that the treatment is totally safe, not just to the eye, but to the rest of the body, with the idea that at some point in the not-too-distant future, we could take the test to humans.
Now, you were on the road this past week. You took you and one of your dogs to Congress. What was their reactions to your work?
We got an incredible reception from Congress. We gave a congressional briefing in the House of Representatives describing the work that was supported by the National Institutes of Health and some other charitable organizations. And the idea here was to encourage Congress to contribute to supply funds to National Eye Institute for such research, which can really have practical consequences, such as what we've shown. We brought the dog, whose name is Lancelot. This is one of the three dogs, who happens to be a very attractive, congenial dog, and brought him to Congress. And Lancelot, actually, we weren't quite sure what was going to happen, because Lancelot has grown up in an animal facility and is not used to big crowds, but he behaved as if this was an everyday affair. He walked to the front of the room, sat down, and looked at everybody and followed them with his treated eye. And he was magnificent. And I think people really enjoyed actually seeing him, being able to determine for themselves that he was indeed seeing. So I think the net reaction was very positive.
So funding looks good for future projects then?
Well, let's hope it's translated that way. I think it's important.
One of the things that the press is often guilty of, Doctor, is calling your kind of discovery a, quote, major breakthrough, unquote. When I went to do some research on the Foundation Fighting Blindness website, they even call it a major breakthrough. Do you see it as a major breakthrough? Why or why not?
I certainly do. I think this is the first time that vision has been delivered to an animal that was previously blind. Vision is not just identified on the basis of finding electrical patterns in the retina, which is important in itself, but also the fact that the signal is definitely being relayed to the brain and understood as vision. The other aspect, which I think is unique about our study, is that it's the first demonstration of restoration of vision in a large animal. There have been many studies just in the past 5 or 6 years involving gene therapy treatments to mice and rats, which have diseases very much similar to those found in humans. This is the first time that such a test has been achieved in a large animal, an animal with an eye the same size as a human and very anatomically similar to that of a human. So I think in that respect, it is easy to extrapolate to the sort of situation that would be involved in a human eye about the same size.
Now, we talked earlier about the team aspect of all this. Give us a little more information about the team, and how was the team put together?
This is key, and this is really, I think, the reason why the research was so successful. We have a marvelous team of very talented investigators coming from three different institutions. These include Cornell University, where the animal model was very well characterized and the animals have been maintained, and University of Florida, where the recombinant virus used in this study was generated, and University of Pennsylvania, where we delivered the gene and then measured the effect of the gene on vision. And what's key is that the investigators involved have each bring to the table their own unique sets of experience. This is a very highly technological project, which involves expertise in a variety of levels, including surgical delivery, measurements of visual function, understanding of the animal behavior, delivery methods for viral gene delivery, and basic cell biology, molecular biology. It can go on and on, biochemistry. So all of the investigators have complementary expertise and have worked together beautifully, and I think this is really an unusual situation from what I've seen.
Now, what's the next step? You've had some successes. You've done some good things here, but what's the next step in the research?
Well, we very much want to push forward. We want to make sure that the treatment is as optimal as we can and that it's as long-lived as possible, because ultimately, if this were applied to human, we would want the treatment to last over a lifetime. And we want to make sure that it's absolutely safe. We want to test every aspect of the treatment, make sure that there's no complication or side effect, which we might not have anticipated. And if the treatment continues to perform as well as it has so far and there's no sign of toxicity, then we will begin performing the testing in humans with the same disease.
Now, toxicity is a problem that you think you may see in the future, and if so, how do you measure that?
Well, we, based on the experience that we've had so far working with this particular virus, we have seen very little evidence of toxicity. But these experiments are fairly recent. Maybe that this sort of work has been performed over the past 4 years or so, which is not a huge amount of experience. So we want to look for effects with, say, the largest possible dose or complication if the virus went to a different compartment of the eye and so forth. Toxicity can be measured non-invasively in the eye because it's one of the few organs you can look into and actually get a sense of the health of the tissue. But we also have many quantitative tests which will evaluate toxic effect. One of them I mentioned before is using the electrical activity of the retina as a marker because changes in the amplitude of this or the pattern of this can reflect toxicity. So we will be looking very hard for those sorts of things.
Now, you told me off-air that the next 2 to 3 years is very important. What kind of things, and you've kind of elaborated on that, but what kind of things will you be looking for in the next 2-3 years? Why is it so important?
Well, we want to make sure that the dogs that we're treating now will still be seeing 3 years from now, that their vision hasn't deteriorated at all. And we want to make sure that we can actually treat both eyes. So far, we've only treated one eye. It'd be nice to know that we could restore vision bilaterally. The other hand of this is to look for toxicity. We want to make sure that there's really no untoward effect, and we'll be doing many studies. Some of them are dictated by the FDA for getting a new drug approved, and those involve looking at changes in blood chemistry and enzymes in the blood and numbers of red blood cells, white blood cells, and other cells in the bloodstream, and hormonal changes and weight changes and behavior, et cetera. There's a whole long list of parameters that we'll be measuring in very detailed fashion over time. And those are the sorts of things which will lead to, we hope, to approval for use in humans, assuming that no toxic effects are found.
You mentioned the Food and Drug Administration a second ago, and I'd like, if you could, to give us some kind of a step-by-step thing where you would get from not working with the canine buddies to working with human subjects in some kind of a clinical trial. How does that all come about?
Well, the whole situation is quite detailed as far as administrative details, not to mention the scientific steps. It's gotten more complicated over the past years because there's a lot more bureaucracy, which is probably good because I think it's tightened up the safety procedures and making sure that things are performed at the appropriate time. The studies will be done in as dictated by the FDA in two different strains of animals so that we can look for as closely as possible for any toxic effects, and we will continue to be working with dogs as one of those strains and then mice as the other strain because it's easier to work with large numbers of mice than large numbers of dogs. And we'll be studying those animals as a function of time, making sure there's no toxicity and that the animals continue to be healthy and to see well. And when we have accumulated all of the data from these sets of studies, we will apply to the FDA for the ability to test the treatment in humans. Likely the first phase of treatment will be what's called a phase one human clinical trial, which basically aims at testing safety of a particular reagent. It doesn't aim at looking for therapy, but in this case we will be hoping to see a therapeutic effect as well. And we anticipate, although things could change in the next few years, we anticipate that the first test will be done in adults with this particular mutation in RPE65 gene.
And do we know how soon that might be?
I think the soonest it could be would be 3 years, which sounds like a long time for someone with a disease, but for us, we think that that's coming up very quickly.
You mentioned the bureaucracy a second ago. How, as you as a researcher, see that? Is this something that's frustrating to you?
It's very frustrating, but it's necessary, necessary evil. Actually, it's there to protect humans, I think. But it's something that scientists and clinicians now face all the time, so I can't say that it's any surprise to us. Paperwork, I think, is enormous and has gotten even more so just in the past year or so. In fact, I think to perform a human clinical trial using gene therapy now, it will be necessary to hire an external consulting group just to keep the paperwork in line because there is so much of it. So in summary, my feeling is that it is enormously consuming in terms of time and resources, but that's what we've got to do, and so we're going to do it.
You talked earlier in the interview about how the results you saw, a researcher might see once in a lifetime. How does a researcher stay on an even keel emotionally? Because you may have never seen this kind of results.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. I never even anticipated that I'd see something so dramatic. And emotionally, well, I mean, I think all of us, all the investigators involved in this, have been totally thrilled about the results and want to make sure that the story is as tight as possible and that we aren't being fooled by anything. And yet at the same time, once we're sure that the results are clear and ready to be presented to the public, we feel that it's appropriate to explain everything in detail to individuals who call us or ask about the experiment. We've had many, many patient calls and from around the world, people whose children have this disease and they'd love their child enlisted right now and so forth. And those are really the most emotional calls because as a parent, I can totally relate to these other parents who really want the best thing for their children. And I find myself telling them what I'd be doing in their shoes is have my child tested for the specific gene mutation and wait and see what is happening as far as the progress here in looking at the preclinical studies and what will happen with the first clinical trial.
Finally, Doctor, if all your work pays off and you see the fruits of your labor, what do you think you're going to see for gene therapy in, say, the next 3 to 5 years?
I'm sorry, what do I think I'll see for it?
Right. If the fruits of your labor pay off, all the work comes down the way you think it might happen, what do you see gene therapy as part of the arsenal fighting vision loss?
Well, I think at this point we have a good feeling that this sort of treatment will work for at least specific forms of retinal degeneration. I think one of our jobs now is to understand the aspects of the particular model we've used that make this so successful. Or is there something about this particular disease which makes it more amenable to this treatment, and are there other diseases like it that we could step into right after this? And so I think that's how we're thinking, and I think my hope is that the treatment will be extrapolatable to humans, that we'll see the same sort of result in humans with the RP65 mutation as we'd have with the dogs, that then we'll be able to step into related diseases and eventually step into more distant diseases, which may be more prevalent.
Doctor, we appreciate you taking time out of your very busy day to talk with us today.
It was a pleasure.
I'd like, if we could, to maybe touch base with you in maybe 6 months or so to get a status report.
That would be great.
And give old Lancelot a hug for us.
And, okay, will do.
Take care of your dogs, and we'll be talking down the road.
Thanks very much.
That's Dr. Gene Bennett, Associate Professor of Ophthalmology at the University of Pennsylvania, talking with us about gene therapy. As we said, just another weapon in the arsenal fighting vision loss. I'm Jim Layton.
Yeah, thank you very much, Jim. And that was a very enjoyable interview. 29 minutes past the hour as we listen to this live on ACB Radio Mainstream, the program live today between 2200 and 0 hours UTC. So if you're listening to it live, then the phones are open now for you to have your say. Our number is area code 212-812-2800. That's in the United States. Area code 212-812-2800. And when you're asked to enter a conference code, it is, as usual, 0480-5512. That conference code, 0480-5512. The lines are open. The board is free. Spiderphone.com is awaiting your call on any subject that you care to mention. You may want to follow up. It's great when you talk to someone who is involved in genetic research who's called Gene, isn't it? I mean, you couldn't hope for a better name than that for being involved in genetic research. Now, as a follow-up to that story, because it was recorded, I think, 2 or 3 months ago, Jim tells me that Lancelot is still doing well. He caught up with Gene Bennett last week, and Gene tells him that Lancelot is still doing pretty well, and that it's important that expectations aren't unduly raised, and that research or work on humans in this regard is probably at least 3 to 5 years away. Before they start even thinking about doing the work on humans, they want to get the eyesight working in both eyes of a non-human subject. So they've still got to do that, but it's all looking pretty positive, and Lancelot is still enjoying the effects of the therapy. So what I thought that we could talk about, but of course you're free to raise any subjects that you like, I thought we might see if we can focus on the good things about being blind. Are there any? I was moved to think about this subject this morning when my wife pushed me out of the way and said, "Get over there, because you need the I need the mirror and you don't," she said to me. Which is a very good thing, isn't it? Don't need a mirror to shave with. I remember as a kid I used to be really rapt that I could read long into the night. Always been a voracious reader and radio listener. I don't think that being blind really helped my radio listening much into the wee small hours, but it certainly did help my reading. Used to consume all sorts of braille. So the positive aspects of being blind. You may also want to follow up on this interview. It's very good news that progress is being made. Nobody would wish blindness on a child, or I guess on anyone. But I do wonder whether there are some concerns with this. I always feel very uncomfortable when I go to conferences and I hear these genetic people talking away there, because it seems to me that not all of them, by any means, but many of them seem to have a very negative view of blindness and what blind people are capable of. And it does concern me that parents of blind children may be hanging out there for a cure for their kids, instead of actually appreciating that blindness is not a death sentence, that it is possible to lead a fulfilling life, to grow up and get a job and have kids and just do the things that people do when you are a blind person. Are the genetic research people giving that message effectively? I was very proud of my wife Amanda. One day we were at a conference where there was a genetic researcher talking, and she kept on saying that there was a such and such percentage risk of having a blind child. And Amanda actually got up and castigated this person for talking that way, and she said that the term risk is a very emotive term, and it speaks volumes about your attitude to blindness, she said to this genetic researcher. "Why don't you say," my dear wife said, "a 50% chance of having a blind child? Why do you talk about a risk of having a blind child?" That term is immediately saying that blindness is somehow a negative thing. And Amanda was saying that she doesn't necessarily perceive it to be a negative thing. And it's for that reason that I get very concerned about agencies for the blind who try to do two things. They try to provide services to blind people, and they also get involved in prevention of blindness. For the life of me, I don't see how those values are compatible. You can't, on the one hand, go out there saying that we need financial assistance, we need the tools of the trade so that blind people can be effective participants in society, and then, on the other hand, talk about the tragedy of blindness and seek funding for prevention. I don't see how you can do both. I'm not saying that there isn't a place for both, but they should surely be done by separate organisations. You can't be fighting blindness on the one hand and then portraying it to be a normal, everyday event that isn't a big deal and that the big problem is attitudinal barriers. I don't understand how an agency can be involved in preventing blindness and being involved in the rehabilitation of blind people. Seems madness to me. Area code 631, hello.
Good evening, John Inman.
How are you, Richard?
Oh, how are you? I'm sure you must... I wonder if you have any hair left with all the problems with the ACB website.
Well, it hasn't been the easiest couple of weeks, I must confess.
Yeah, yeah, and especially when you I got your email when you asked to check out, and I was listening to the program, and probably like the first third of it, it dropped out, and it said I got the 404 as far as web page not found. It's like the web page crashed.
When was this?
This was this afternoon.
This was the ACB website, the ACB radio website?
Yeah. Yeah, the ACB radio, I mean.
So are you talking about the Live 365 stream or the website itself?
No, the page. The page itself. I went to the on-demand and it lost the page.
Okay. Yeah, well, I can believe it. We're doing our best to work through those issues, and I really appreciate people's patience, and all I can say, I suppose, is that we will get there. Hang in there.
Well, I think the one thing that really surprises me is when I read your first email saying that the company that was taking care of the supposedly the hard drive that crashed, that they didn't back up any of the data, and that really surprised me.
Well, it surprises me, but then I have since learned that it's not necessarily all that common, apparently, according to some, for ISPs in the United States to back up, which somebody has since told me, and I wasn't aware of that, and I certainly am now.
Yeah, so I guess you have hopefully a lot of CDs that you can just upload everything eventually.
Yeah, we are having some difficulty in that area. The Blindline archives are essentially restored now, but it's been really difficult to upload because of a couple of technical issues we're working through, and that has really impeded the progress of our restoring the site. So there are a whole lot of things going on behind the scenes that we're hoping to address soon.
Yeah, I know. It's very frustrating, especially when you put all that work into it, because it's really a great site, and all the work that you've done, it's just a shame to turn around one day and the whole thing just goes out the window.
Well, yeah, but these things, we'll bounce back. I mean, ACB Radio always has, and I'm sure that we'll eventually see this through, and it's just a matter of working through some of the technical issues and also some of the long-term strategic issues for ACB's internet presence, which are issues that, while they are frustrating in the short term that we're having these problems, we can't rush them. We need to make sure that the decisions that are taken are the correct ones for the long term.
Yeah. And as far as your topic today, one of the good things about, I would say, I always liked it, and I'm sure you probably notice it even with your guide dog, is that animals seem to notice us a little bit more, and they always seem to bring a smile to your face.
Do you think so? Do you think animals are aware in some way when they're dealing with a blind person?
Yeah, I think so.
That's interesting. I often wonder, I have a guide dog, and I often wonder whether my guide dog knows that I'm blind or not. I don't know.
My experience with the short experience that I had with my dog, I think he knew I was blind because, you know, as soon as my instructor came to try and help me with some problems, I mean, the dog did his work, but then as soon as he left, he was back to his old trick. So I'm sure he had the wool over my eyes.
Oh, you're absolutely right about that. It astounds me the way that they can do that. When I've had difficulty with a dog not particularly behaving on a route or something like that, and I've called the instructor in to say, tell me what's going on here, and the dog does it absolutely perfectly. But mind you, dogs aren't the only ones who behave like that. Have you noticed that when you've got a computer problem that's a bit intermittent and you take it to the computer guy and it works absolutely perfectly when he's there?
Yep.
Yep. Yeah, so I don't know what the story is there. It's some sort of karma or something like that. But that's an interesting perspective on animals somehow being more aware of
Do you think it's blindness, or is it, does it extend to disability in general?
I'm sorry, say again, because the other phone was ringing.
Do you think it's disability in general, or does it extend to just blindness?
No, I think disability in general. I think they notice the difference. Yeah.
Hmm. Interesting. Well, I appreciate you getting us started off, and it's nice to have you back on the old internet radio again.
Yeah. Well, glad to hear you, Jonathan. And I guess this is an interesting time. I guess will it be more permanent?
No, it's going to go back to 9 o'clock Eastern next week again. I just had to move Blindline around today because of other commitments, but we'll be back next week at its normal time.
Okay, and I hope your health is good. You're sounding very good. You don't sound like you have any flu, so I hope you're over your flu.
Well, you know, the thing is that this flu, you don't actually really sound like you have it. I was thinking this morning as I was getting up, and one thing, I'm pretty much over it. I mean, it was really debilitated last week, but I can sort of get up and function now. But you get very tired very easily. Doing something that would normally just be second nature, you feel like you've run a marathon. But, you know, back in the 70s, everybody went through this phase, and they kept saying things like, they can put a man on the moon, but they can't do whatever it was, whatever their particular hobby horse was. This was the big phrase in the 70s. You can put a man on the moon, but you can't. It amazes me that we've come so far and we can't contain these blooming awful viruses that come and wreak havoc in your system.
Yeah, that and your computer, too.
Yeah, bad scene. Oh, good to hear from you anyway.
Take care.
Okay, bye now. There you go, that's Richard Costa calling us from area code 631. And you can call us too, the number is area code 212-812-2800. That's area code 212-812-2800, courtesy of spiderphone.com. And the PIN, or the conference code, is 0480-5512. That's 0480-5512. And the board is absolutely free. So if you're worried about incurring long distance charges, if you give us a call right now, we will put you straight to air as soon as you come up on that machine. How's that for service? We won't give you the Muzak treatment, I tell you. And some of the things that we've been talking about, well, the good things about being blind, if there are any. What do you think? I mean, are there some good points about being a blind person? Richard suggested that blind people seem to have a better affinity with animals, that animals seem to know in some way. I've been talking about not having to have a mirror to do things like shaving in. I was reminded of this when I was thinking, what am I going to talk about on Blindline this morning? And my wife shoved me away from the mirror saying, I need this and you don't. So there you go. And also, of course, reading in the dark is the classic one, isn't it? Being able to do that, especially here in New Zealand at the moment, the hydro lakes are running dry. We haven't had enough rain. So they're threatening all sorts of power shortages and things like that. I'm still able to read in the dark, as always. So, I've also suggested that you might want to talk about the pros and cons of genetic research in the context of what it means for blind people. About images of blind people. Seems to me that people are really, really willing to get involved in this. Good, they're finding a cure kind of syndrome, instead of actually facing up to issues like accommodation of our needs. And it's almost like a panacea, this whole genetic modification, genetic engineering thing. And what effect is that having on parents who are hanging out there for a cure instead of realizing that it is possible with correct attitudes and training for their blind children to grow up and be constructive contributors to society? So you may have thoughts on those issues. You may want to ask some questions about the ACB radio website. I don't know what more I can answer, but I'd be happy to have a go. And anything at all that's on your mind, you're welcome to give us a call. The board is free. The number again, area code 212-812-2800. That's area code 212-812-2800. And the PIN, 0480-5512. That's 0480-5512. Feel free to give me a call. Keep me company. Operators are standing by. Back shortly.
If you're a modem user and you live in the United States, now you can have quality, reliable internet access and support ACB Radio at the same time.
Easy Access USA gives you flat rate 56k internet access, two email accounts, and Usenet news groups for only $19.95 a month. And every month, $4 of that great price goes to ACB Radio, so we can keep bringing you your favorite shows and expanding our service. So don't delay. Switch today to Easy Access USA. Surf on over now to www.easyaccessusa.net. That's www.easyaccessusa.net. Or if you'd rather sign up over the phone, call them toll-free at 866-835-7872. That's 866-835-7872 between 8 a.m. and 7 p.m. Eastern. Easy Access USA and ACB Radio, working together to bring you the best.
This is Blind Line on ACB Radio Mainstream. It is 14 minutes before the hour as we do this thing live, and we say good, what must it be, evening. Good evening, Steve Matsura.
Yes, it is evening, Jonathan. Just finished supper and just got on to you about 8 minutes into the interview. A fascinating interview.
Yeah.
You have pressed a number of buttons for me, and I'll address as many of them as time permits. First of all, I am all for genetic research of virtually any kind. And the main reason for that is because if they had started in, if they had known a little bit more about the genome mapping and things of that nature, I may have turned out a bit differently than I did. I have been a participant in many gene studies over my adolescent and early adult life because of some birth issues with me that nobody has been able to figure out. And I wonder if they did those studies again today, if they might get more information. Unfortunately, most of the participants in those studies are long dead and buried, so that's not going to be practical or possible. But I wonder if we had gotten started with this 30, 40, 50 years ago, where we might be today in curing some things. And of course, with gene therapy and gene manipulation, there are problems along the way, there's accidents along the way, there is real risk along the way. Never mind chance, there is risk. And that sort of dovetails onto the next issue, which is this business about the 50% risk of having a blind child. I agree with you, I think it's disgusting. The word risk should be, I wouldn't even use the word chance. I would use the word probability, because chance even sounds kind of negative.
Yes.
Probability sounds more like, you know, just a raw statistic, interpreted as you may.
All right, let me just take you back there a bit.
Oh, sure.
You were talking about how you've participated in this kind of research in the past, and maybe if it was done today, it might be more effective. But presumably you don't regret the way things have turned out for you. I mean, you're obviously very successful in your professional life. You're leading a pretty fulfilled existence, I would have thought.
You're correct. I don't regret any of it. Of course, if I had my druthers, I'd rather not have had to have it. But for what I had to deal with, that didn't turn out too badly. We got most of it dealt with, and here I am.
And if somebody came along with some major medical breakthrough and said to you, I am now offering you your sight, would you accept that offer?
I'd take it in the New York minute.
That really interests me. Have you...
The very first thing I'd do with it is find a computer and sit down and read. And read.
Right. And I suppose, in your instance, you've had some sight, so you have seen, you have read as a sighted person, correct?
Actually, I have seen some. I have never read as a sighted person, no. My vision was never that good. About the best I could do was, to any of the listeners who have had some vision, if you could imagine signs in a store window where the letters are like 2 and 3 inches tall, I could manage that at maybe 2 feet. But that's about all.
Because I've brought this up before, and I don't know whether you were listening when I did, but I saw a fascinating film over the Christmas holidays with Myra Savino in it called... Oh, goodness me. And the name of the film's just escaped my mind. But At First Sight was the name of the film.
Oh, sure. That's a big topic of conversation among blind folks.
Right. You seen the movie?
Yes, I have.
Now, what do you think of that? That somebody who's been pretty much blind all his life, who gets his sight back... He can't
traumatic.
He can't translate.
Experience.
Yeah, he can't translate the visual signals into anything meaningful because he doesn't have any real visual perception.
And what I thought was kind of dumb about that is they should have had a blind person or a partially sighted person involved with his instruction. Because this harkens me back to an experiment that went on when I was in high school with a deaf-blind guy who I used to know. They hooked him up to a diathermy machine. A diathermy machine is an old form of heat therapy that uses radio frequency. Well, the theory was that if they put electrodes on his head and pumped audio through it, that he'd be able to hear. Well, the stupid researcher gets in front of the microphone and starts talking and wonders why the guy doesn't respond. Another guy who was with him gets in front of the microphone and starts sending Morse code with his mouth, and the guy responded instantly. Why? Because he knew the Morse code, he didn't know human speech.
Yeah.
If the researcher had thought about it for a second, you know where I'm going with this?
That's a scary thing, though, isn't it? That we are so susceptible to this sort of ignorant research, and there are some people out there who are just longing so much for their vision to be restored or their disability to be cured, whatever that is.
Oh, yeah.
Without actually appreciating that if you've never had a sense of something, suddenly gaining that sense is not going to translate all of those signals into anything that you understand.
No, it's not a cure-all.
Yeah. Yeah.
Very well may open up a bigger can of worms than you've had to deal with so far. Unless you have someone who has walked the walk who can help you through it.
It's a subject that we're going to have to deal with, clearly, because undoubtedly in a few years' time there are going to be blind people who are going to be able to get their vision back all over the place.
Oh, yeah.
It's going to be a whole, what would you call it, vision therapy industry or something. And actually, finally, there's a context in which the word vision is appropriate. We really will need vision education
true
then.
A vision teacher.
Yeah, right. We're really going to need a vision teacher then, yeah.
Yes.
Well, what other buttons have we pressed so far?
Oh, boy, well, that's... Oh, my goodness. I think that the animals know if you have a disability. I don't know whether they... I haven't really thought about whether they know what that disability is, but I do know that the first two dogs that I had, I'm on my third one at the moment, have known who they can play with in certain ways and who they can't, or who likes to do certain activities with them because they can see and who doesn't because they can't. Now, whether they know that the person who can't catch balls when they're rolled to them is blind, I don't know whether they know it on that level, but they know that they're different in some way, and they have to behave with them differently.
Yeah, it's the whole area of the relationship between blind people and their dogs is really quite fascinating. Some of the rapport that gets built up between those animals is just fascinating, between animals
well,
and their
also
handlers.
Also between the blind people's dogs and other people in their, you know, immediate surroundings.
Yeah.
They relate to them in very different ways.
Yes. We have been looking for tasks by which Heidi can earn pocket money, because she's at the stage now where she wants to earn some.
Oh, yeah.
So I've got, I don't know whether this is appropriate or not, and I don't really care.
It's your program, whatever you want.
Oh, no, I'm just talking about whether what I'm going to tell you is appropriate. Not whether telling you is appropriate, but the actual thing, if you see what I'm saying. I've got a feeding Pearl, my guide dog. And, you know, she's really, really good. She gets the food out and she makes sure she sat down and says, wait, and then she toots the whistle and, you know, off it goes. Is that the same routine you guys use in the States for feeding the dog? You make them sit and then blow a whistle and...
Oh, heavens no. The whistle blowing is new. Making them sit, yes. Tooting the whistle, that's a new one on me.
Okay, that's what...
Usually we just put the food down and we'll either make a motion or we'll say eat or we'll say go ahead or okay or...
Okay.
Actually, okay is probably the one we use least because everybody says okay all the time.
Don't they, though?
You don't want the dog thinking... every time you say okay, it means do something.
Well, the way that it's done with the guide dog school here is that you sit them down and you whistle, and that they know that whistle is the most supreme level of command. They must come when that whistle blows. Like if you've let them out somewhere and you blow the whistle and they've gone free running at the park or something, they have to come back, and that they know that that's the only occasion on which they can eat as well.
Interesting. What happens if you lose your whistle?
Well, you whistle yourself, I suppose. You know, you...
What happens if you don't know how?
Can't you whistle?
That's very, very interesting. I've never heard of that before.
See, it's funny, isn't it? It's just
yeah, everybody has their different ways, I suppose.
Yeah. So, anyway, Heidi's doing this, and it's funny to think that Pearl's been around the house a lot longer than Heidi has, because Pearl's been living with us for, I don't know, nearly 7 years now. But, that arrangement seems to be working well, and Heidi really relishes the responsibility of...
Oh, I'll bet.
Yeah.
Now, there are people who say that their dogs will not eat for anybody but them.
I have never
seen a dog that will eat for somebody who holds out the food, I'm telling you.
Well, I'd be very surprised...
Whoever owns the food owns the dog.
I'd be very surprised if any Labrador wouldn't eat for anyone. And
shepherds, maybe. Labradors, you own the food bowl, you own the dog.
Amen. Yeah.
I remember when I retired my first dog, 10 years ago, the day that the person came to pick her up and take her away, they came and they spent some time, they got to know the dog, they played with her a little bit, and we were thinking, what are we going to do to get this dog to go with this man? She's not going to want to do it. And I said, you know what? Pick up her favorite toy, which was a ball, which wasn't even in the shape of a ball anymore. It's been chewed to death. And pick up her food dish, and I bet you she'll follow you. And son of a gun, out the door she went without a backward glance.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whoever owns the food owns the dog.
Yeah, when I was introduced to Pearl, the first thing they got me to do was to give her a biscuit.
Yeah, that's a very common technique.
Yeah, give her a dog biscuit, and yep, she's yours for life. Until the next person gives her a dog biscuit.
Right. Well, you just make sure that never happens.
Yeah. And I hear you've had a bit of a tough weekend.
It's been a very tough week. We are in the middle of a major merger. The company that I work for, which is Chase Manhattan, is merging with J.P. Morgan.
Man, this has been on CNBC, has it?
Yes, it
probably has
in the past,
yeah.
And it probably will be in the future.
Yeah.
Because we've already had what's called day one, where the lines of businesses commingle and start doing business under the same name. Then you have what's called day two, which is where all the internal systems come together. And the same data is flowing through everybody's system. So whether it's a Chase person, a legacy Chase person who's doing it, or a legacy J.P. Morgan person who's doing it, everybody has access to what they're doing. And that's what we're preparing for. That's what this weekend was. And I was supervising a test in what's called the broker-dealer area. And the broker-dealer area is traditionally the ones that make the most money in the company. So if anything goes wrong... heads do roll.
Then you have détente.
Debacle. You have trouble in River City.
Yeah, right, here in River City. You know that Whanganui is actually known as the River City. Did you know that?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, we've even got a radio station here called River City FM.
Huh.
Yeah.
Is that what Whanganui translates to in Maori or something?
Whanganui in Maori means big river.
Close enough.
Nui means big, and Wanga means river.
Uh-huh.
Or water.
Yeah, me and Mr. Pierpont have got to sit down and have a little talk about these hours.
Oh, okay. Hey, now this business, so these are big names in New York, Chase Manhattan and J.P. Morgan. I mean, they're both really big names, aren't they?
Yeah, one is a bank, and one is an institutional investment firm. And that's what Chase was looking for. Chase was looking to hook up with somebody who's big into institutional investments, master trusts, and employee benefits, and that sort of thing. Because we didn't have a lot of that. Chase is very big in retail banking and business banking. And we do have an institutional trust division, but to buy a whole company that does nothing else but that sort of thing, you know, large-scale investments, that's a big deal.
So will there be job losses as a result of that process?
Yes, there will.
Oh.
Yes, there will. What they just did a couple of weeks ago is had what's called a hands-up meeting. Now, in the United States, it is perfectly illegal to do this. In the UK, where Chase has a substantial presence, and in other countries in the world where J.P. Morgan has a substantial presence, it is not. What they do is they sit you down and they say, here's what we will give you if you are willing to leave the firm early. If you are willing to go for an early retirement package, here's what we will give you. And they had one of these meetings locally here in New York, and a lot of people took it.
Wow.
As a matter of fact, a gentleman I work with every day is opting out for early retirement. He may be gone by the end of the year.
But you're hanging in there, are you?
Oh, I'm a career guy. They're going to have to take me out with a pick and shovel.
Yeah. Well, that's a shame, because we were hoping to use you more on ACB radio, you see, with all that spare time.
Oh, well, hey, I got to pay for the DSL access somehow.
Well, I appreciate you responding to all those buttons being pressed, and it's always good to hear from you.
Can I put in a free plug for my other project?
Of course you can.
Well, you sure?
Yep.
Well, I have been graciously accepted a position, how do I describe it? It's not live, it's uploaded, pre-produced program on a radio station in the Springfield, Illinois area, and I'm doing a three-hour Celtic music program of my own. It's a lot different than what you hear from DJ Nir on ACB Radio, and as I said, because it's not live, there's no request possible, but it's all music, and if you want to hear it on the net, go to www.wqna.org. It's on twice a week. The first airing is tonight, in fact, at 0500 Universal. It's a three-hour program. And then we'll be back Wednesday at 1700 Universal.
So that's www.wqna.org. Excellent.
Well, and there's a listen live link, and it's a real player sure stream, so even if you're on low band, it sounds pretty decent on low band, let me tell you.
Groovy. Well, congratulations on doing that, and I'm sure it'll be a great show. I must tune in.
It's pretty good, I got to admit. I was just previewing tonight's program, and I'm pretty proud of it.
Cool. Cool stuff. Well, I hope you have a wonderful evening, and say hi to the Big Apple.
Hello, Big Apple. Big Apple says, crunch.
Yeah. Good on you.
Have a good evening, and the very best to all of your family in Wanganui.
Thanks very much, Steve.
Bye-bye.
Okay, bye now. This is Blindline. Hello, area code 832.
Hi, this is Jim Slagle in Houston, Texas.
Hi, Jim. Nice to hear from you.
First of all, on Main Menu, I listened to the archives for August 8th,
yep.
Starting 3 hours ago, and it worked fine for me.
I'm pleased to hear that. We're getting mixed results, so I'm not sure what that tells us, but I'm glad it went well for you.
Let's see, about Dr. Bennett, had some comments. First, I wonder if it would be possible to get her or one of her colleagues onto one of our shows so then we could ask questions of
I think that would be a great idea. Let's see if we can do that. I'll put that in the suggestion file.
Okay, good. And maybe you'll know the answers to some of these questions. Do you know how well the dogs see?
Well, as I understand it, the dog sees pretty much perfectly out of one eye. They've only done the work on the one eye, as I understand it.
Right.
But that in that eye, he's got pretty good vision, very good vision, in fact.
Well, I mean, all she said in the interview was that the dog could, like, avoid obstacles, but, you know, that...
Yeah, it's my understanding that...
It could be 2100 vision rather than...
Well, yeah, so you say... I hope that someone will ring and correct me if I'm wrong about this, but my understanding is that the vision is pretty much restored to normal in that eye.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
I was wondering also if there's any thought about trying retinitis pigmentosa in animals. That's, well, RP is what I have.
Of course, we haven't even touched on the whole question of the appropriateness of experimenting on animals like this. We probably shouldn't even go there, but, you know, that whole subject is a bit of a controversy in itself.
Yeah, well, not with me. I think it's a great idea.
Do you?
Yeah. And
you have RP, I take it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, it might be that the particular disease that Dr. Menon is working on, the path to the human case may get blocked somewhere, but there might be a better path going to other similar diseases in animals and then to humans might not be blocked.
Right.
So they really should be trying both paths, it seems to me.
Well, you know, there's so much research going on in this area now that it seems fairly certain, I would have thought, that within the next few years we're going to start seeing some kind of therapy that's going to be usable in humans.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I would have thought
so.
Yeah,
it looks really promising.
It does, and I know that the researchers are really keen to dampen down expectations, and there's nothing worse than raising people's expectations with something as critical as their eyesight, but people are saying maybe 3 to 5 years we'll start seeing something coming to market, as it were.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm glad to see that she wasn't so cautious, and that she said, yeah, it is a breakthrough, and usually they're always so cautious, but this really does seem like a breakthrough, though.
Do you think that there's a balancing act, though, between obviously availing oneself of that breakthrough should it come, but also encouraging people to learn the techniques of blindness to get on with their lives in the meantime?
Sure, I think you got to do that because it's certainly not guaranteed. And but a person, well, like I've learned all the techniques already, so I don't have. I'm not choosing any more about that. I'm 67 years old.
Right.
And I've been blind. Well, RP, you know how that goes. So I've been totally blind for like 40 years.
Yes.
So I know Braille quite well and use of the cane quite well and all that. But I would sure like to be able to see.
So if the chance was offered to you, you would most certainly take it?
Definitely, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
That brings up my sort of final point, and it'd be really nice if it, in a case like this, where this does seem to be a breakthrough, that we have an accelerated program. You know, like the people that had AIDS, they actually were pretty militant and then succeeded in getting accelerated schedules from the FDA and so on with their drugs. Maybe there should be something similar for this. Like in my case, I'd be willing to take some risk with my eyes. You know, I'm totally blind anyhow. If there was some hope of getting improved or a good vision. And I yep. also said I was 67 years old. And I can't wait 10 years. You know, it's
understand.
Important 10 years coming up here. And really nice if they could accelerate it.
And it's a matter of degree as well, because in some of the developing countries, you know, there's so many instances of preventable blindness that mm-hmm. need to be worked on as well. People like the Fred Hollows Foundation doing some fantastic work on cataracts, areas like that where the surgery does exist, and there are people around the world who are becoming blind through conditions like river blindness, all sorts of things like that. And what they need is
simple and cheap to treat these things.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, it is really cheap.
But the countries don't have any money at all to treat them, so it's trouble.
It is the trouble, and it really makes you think. One of the things about the World Blind Union General Assembly, which I attended last year, is that we're talking about things like access to technology, and we certainly should continue to push that envelope, but you have people in some countries who are just wanting a second-hand Braille textbook. You know, they'd be delighted to have access to those things.
Yep.
Yeah,
that's true.
But anyway, I guess that if Western countries keep pushing the envelopes and we continue to be mindful of our brothers and sisters in those countries, maybe, I don't know, I've never been a fan of the trickle-down theory, but somehow we have to find a way to make the world a more equitable place.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, like with the cataracts, that used to be a complicated, kind of risky procedure, but now it's pretty routine here.
Yeah.
So they can do it in large numbers, and do it in large numbers in some of the third world countries.
Yeah, and only a, you know, a couple of dollars a pop. That's what amazes me. It's really
very
cost effective.
Yeah, they line up, you know, and zip, 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 and they, it's, it gets real cheap that way.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate you giving us a call, Jim, and I've made a note to see if we can perhaps get someone live on the program so that people like yourself can phone in and ask the tough questions.
Okay, thanks. Keep up the good work.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Bye-bye now.
Bye.
There we go. This is Blind Line on ACB Radio Mainstream, and once again, the board is free if you want to have a chat to us. The number in New York City is area code 212-812-2800. That's area code 212-812-2800. And when you're asked to enter a conference code, courtesy of our friends at spiderphone.com, and we really appreciate them providing these services to us, the number is 0480-5512. That number, 0480-5512. Blind Line will be back at the normal time of 9 o'clock Eastern, 6 Pacific. That's 1 hour universal time next week. And on the program next week, we're going to be speaking with Jonathan Simeon of the National Alliance of Blind Students, and we're going to be talking about what those blind students are up to. If you followed the ACB convention in Des Moines, Iowa, just a couple of months ago, then you will be aware that they are the fastest growing affiliate. They got an award for that, for the number of members they were able to recruit over the last year. Jonathan has recently been elected the president of that organization, and so we will be talking to him about what's going down. So join us for that. We'll go back to the phones now and say good evening to area code 401.
Jonathan, how are you?
I'm very well, considering.
Nick Zamorelli.
Oh, well, nice to hear from you, Nick. I think we've spoken on the email a few times.
A few times, yes, we have.
Yeah.
It's wonderful to finally talk to you.
Well, it's good to hear from you.
You do such an excellent job. I'm just so impressed. As I've said to you in my emails, I've only found ACB Radio very recently, and I'm just very, very impressed with the work that you and Dave Williams and all the staff at ACB have done. It's just terrific. It's you sort of grabbed me with the main menu, and then I came over to Blind Line, and it's a great place to be.
Well, I appreciate that very much, and it's great when new people discover us and spread the word, and I guess that's how we've grown over the last nearly 2 years now.
Just a second.
Jonathan,
I've been very interested in some of the work that you've been doing and some of the discussions that you've been having, technology related.
Right.
Particularly your conversation on the most recent main menu about making cell phones more accessible to people with visual disabilities.
He's a fascinating man, Jim Fruchterman. He really knows his stuff, and he's very interesting to talk to.
Yeah, I found him very interesting as well, and I also found what you had to say interesting about your having the one of the Motorola phones, the L series, and we have. I don't know if you got my most recent email.
Actually, yes, I have. I've got it. I filed it to respond to. But now that we're talking, I can respond to you in person. You see?
Absolutely. And you can just go ahead and delete the email. but we have, you know, one of the ones available in here in the United States is the P series, the TimePort P series, and it has very similar menu functions to, I suspect, that of the L series.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought what you had to say was very, very interesting, and so much so that I actually wrote to Motorola. I was sitting at my computer last night, and I said to my wife, I said, "Honey, I'm going to make it my business to try to get one of these companies to make a fully accessible cell phone." And I wrote to Motorola, and I used your example of if you can take and make menu commands accessible as well as voice tags for phone numbers, why can't you then take and make, in effect, a talking caller ID system? And I referenced the fact that we have a company here in New England. I'm in Rhode Island, but there's a company in New Hampshire called Classco, I don't know. Are you familiar with them?
I am indeed. I think I have one of their talking caller ID boxes here.
I would think you would. Yeah, uh-huh. And I mentioned it in my message on the Motorola website, and I obviously just sort of mentioned to them that I didn't think that this would be as you said a huge stretch for them to be able to do this and to make, you know, a cell phone. Of course, I guess it's not technically cellular these days. It's PCS and other things. But to make a mobile phone completely accessible, and I wrote to them. I don't have a Motorola phone right now. I have an Ericsson, but Motorola seems to be the one that's taking the lead in this. Would you agree with that?
Now, there is one of the leases, and I get my leases mixed up, so I'm not even going to attempt to remember which lease it is, has been doing some dialogue with Nokia about this. And my understanding is that Nokia are quite interested as well in making their cellular products accessible.
Well, that would be excellent because Nokia is a wonderful product. I had a Nokia phone that I gave to my wife, and it's a terrific product. And
they're the backbone of the Finnish economy, you know.
I'm sorry?
They are the backbone of the Finnish economy. It's amazing.
They really are. I mean, you hear... back in March, did you happen to catch... I don't know how much accessibility or availability you have to... television programming here in the United States, but the second installment of the Silicon Summit on MSNBC?
I don't have access to MSNBC here. We get a lot of other stuff, but I don't have access to that one.
Well, it was. I actually have it on videotape, and I'd be happy to send it to you. One of the segments that they presented on that program was from Finland. And the ability of cell phones to, you know, do much more than make calls. Even have the ability now to debit. It actually showed one girl paying for a pizza.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right on the cell phone. It was very, very interesting.
We have a network here in New Zealand called EFTPOS, which stands for Electronic Fund Transfer at Point of Sale. We've had it for years. So one of the things about New Zealand is because we're quite small and we have a reputation for being willing to adopt new technology, we often get this stuff quite early. And so what happens is that when you put your, you know, the card that you would use to access money from a money machine, an ATM, you can actually put these in another type of machine and it instantly sends the funds from your bank account to the bank account of the merchant. And these systems are everywhere. You know, the local corner stores have them. Just everybody's got them. And now they've just gone mobile so that when, and this may be the kind of thing you're talking about, when the pizza man comes over to deliver your pizza, you give them your ATM card. He hands you a keypad and you type in your 4-digit PIN and the money has instantly gone out of your bank account into theirs, courtesy of the cellular network.
It's tremendous. The abilities are just incredible. I was struck by what you said to the last caller about technology being a wonderful thing, but just the idea of being able to get even secondhand Braille textbooks to developing countries, and I was struck by what you said about not being a fan of the trickle-down theory, but I think that it does have some relevance here. I can speak to my own personal situation. I got my first computer back in 1994 when I won a scholarship at the University of Rhode Island, and it was quite a large sum for scholarships to do with basically whatever you wanted. And when I learned that I was going to be receiving this award, it was a slam dunk. I knew right away what I was going to do. And I got my first computer. It was an IBM PC with a 540 meg hard drive, which back in those days was huge.
Yes, it was.
And I started with the Arctic Transport and their Business Vision, their DOS version of their software.
Yes.
And then I went to WinVision, and now I'm using WindowEyes, and I absolutely love it. I get up every morning, Jonathan, and I still, to this day, and it's been 7-8 years now, that I still get this amazing rush when I sit down at my computer and start to surf the web and read the newspaper and things like that. It has been life altering.
Yes, I'm pleased to hear you say that, because that's exactly how I feel about it. And one of the, I guess I have a missionary zeal for wanting to make sure that technology is available to so many others who could benefit from it. I first got on to a major news source, I guess, that I could read independently through CompuServe, and that was back in about 1988.
CompuServe was my original ISP.
Yeah. You know, and in those days, it used to cost a bundle to access CompuServe from this country. And we were—I just got together with the woman who's now my wife, and we were thinking about saving for a house. And when I got let loose on CompuServe for the first time, it was like incredible stuff to be able to access the Executive News Service and the Associated Press online. And when the bill came, it was something like $1,300.
Oh,
and I think that and we were students then. I think that I was very lucky to have held on to Amanda through that very difficult period when she of course she was the one who opened the bill. Because, you know, it wasn't accessible. She just about hit the roof.
She's cited?
Yeah. Yeah, but you see, now you can just go onto the New York Times website or the Guardian, and of course local New Zealand newspapers as well, and access all of this information for just the price of an internet connection on a monthly basis. It's incredible how far we've come and how liberating this information access is.
It is liberating is the word for it. But I want to address one other thing, if I may.
Sure.
I had something happen to me this morning, and it's happened quite a bit, and I wanted to sort of get your take on it, because I listened to one of the programs in the Blind Line archive where you had Amy Rule on the program, and you were discussing issues surrounding parenting and blindness.
Yes.
And I was very struck by what you had to say when you described the incident that took place at your daughter's school.
Right.
Wherein, of course, you know, for those that may not be have had the opportunity to hear it or remember, if I'm describing it correctly, it was a situation where one of the teachers greeted you and your daughter at the gate and said something like, "Well, it's nice to see that you're helping your father." And, of
yes.
course, you immediately, you know, took her aside and very lightly said something, and then later met with the whole staff and said, "Wait a minute, that's not the way it is." Well, something similar, along similar lines, happened this morning, and it happens quite a bit. I took my wife and stepdaughter to breakfast, but actually she took us to breakfast, because I went into my wallet and I looked and I found that I didn't have enough cash. But anyway, So we were sitting there at the table, and the gentleman who was our waiter came up to me, and he said, "Hi, Nick." And, of course, you know, one of the things I'm very good at is making people believe that I know who they are when either I'm not sure or I have absolutely no idea.
Yeah, sometimes that gets you into big trouble, man.
It does. I've sat down and I've had entire conversations with people, and
who was that?
Yeah, it's amazing. And what... How do you feel about that? Do you think that people should go ahead and take the initiative and say, you know, "Hi, Jonathan, it's so-and-so," or do they not do that because they think that you'll be upset with them for them believing that you don't know who they are?
Well, I don't really mind about this. What I do mind is when people want to play guessing games with you. That really annoys me severely when somebody
right.
says, "Guess who this is?" You know that.
Right.
I think generally people just don't think about saying, "Hi, Nick, it's whoever." And
right.
so often I just try gently to say, "I'm sorry, you have to remind me who you are." And it can be a bit embarrassing, but I've often found, having tried it the other way, that it can be even more embarrassing when you think you're talking to, when the penny drops, you know, after about 5 minutes of talking to someone and you finally realize who they are. So I often try to get that out of the way at the beginning of the conversation.
Yeah, and I know that's the thing to do, but sometimes it is truly embarrassing.
Yeah, it is. It is.
Because, you know, you don't want people to think that you don't remember them, and sometimes it's unfortunate. What is the climate in New Zealand toward blind people? Do you find that it's similar? Because I know you've spent quite a bit of time here in the U.S. Do you find that it's similar? Is it better? Is it worse?
It's different. I wouldn't say it's better or worse. I mean, it never ceases to amaze me how appallingly I'm treated at American airports compared to the way I'm treated in New Zealand airports. But then, of course, there's a lot more Braille in the US. Braille on elevators, Braille on hotel rooms, which is absolutely fantastic. You're more likely to find a Braille menu in a restaurant in the States than you are here. So it's different. And I think if you kind of added up the positives and negatives, it had come out about the same, I would say.
Interesting.
Yeah. I appreciate you giving us a call. I have to move on to this other call who's been waiting patiently, but it's really good to hear you.
Thank you, Jonathan. It's been a pleasure talking to you, and hopefully we can do it again.
Okay, thanks, Dick. I hope so.
Thank you.
Okay, bye now. And this is Blind Line. Thank you for waiting. Hi there. Hello. Oh, I don't know. Let me just see what's going on here. Oh, yes, we're talking to them. Hello, speak to me. Hello there. Okay, then. Well, don't speak to me, then. Oh, I could have talked to Nick a bit longer. Oh, well, we'll get rid of that. And the board is now free. If you'd like to give us a call, the number is area code 212-812-2800. That's area code 212-812-2800. And courtesy of spiderphone.com, when you're asked to enter a conference code, you can just enter 0480-5512. That's area code 212-812-2800 and the conference code 0480-5512. Thanks to spiderphone.com for making it all happen here on ACB Radio Mainstream. And don't forget that tomorrow talk is on at the usual time of 9 Eastern, 6 Pacific for a couple of hours. More stimulating talk on ACB Radio Mainstream, the talk of the blind community. We'll hear from Dennis Miller, who's back with Miller Time. And no doubt he'll be giving us a Chandra Levy update. And also, we will hear from Marlena Lieberg. I'm not sure what Marlena has planned tomorrow. Perhaps she's going to get back into the kitchen and talk to us about all of those good things. But no doubt if you watch the ACB Radio lists, then you'll be able to hear all about those. And I do encourage you to subscribe to one of those lists, either the announcements lists, where you hear information about what's happening on ACB Radio, or the friends list, where you get the same information, but it also allows you to participate in discussion about shows. The announcements list is very low volume, and the friends list is, sort of moderate volume. It's not a heavy list at all in terms of traffic. And you can find details about how to subscribe on the ACB Radio website at www.acbradio.org. It is also a good opportunity to subscribe and find out about the progress of the restoration of the ACB Radio site. We're doing our best to keep people informed about how things are going with that on that list. Well, the board is still free, so if you want to get straight on the air, now is a very good time to call in. There'll be absolutely no waiting. Oh, look at that. Someone's just done exactly that. So let's put this call on the air and say hello there. Thank you for waiting. No, you didn't wait at all, actually.
I didn't have to wait you
didn't?
Very long.
No, you
actually
didn't. Yeah, isn't that marvellous?
I can barely hear you.
Oh, that's terrible. That's a terrible thing. I'll try and improve that for you.
Oh, that's a little better.
I'm pleased.
Now, just on the subject of who we are and all that stuff, I just better tell you I'm Derek.
Excellent, Derek. How's it going?
Not bad. This connection's actually doing a lot better than I thought it would, because last time I had some terrible problems.
You're calling on something like Dialpad, eh?
No, I'm using Netophone, actually.
Okay, so it's internet telephony. I thought there was a bit of a delay there.
Yeah. How do you deal with people playing the guessing games thing? Because really, that happens at school, and it's crappy, and I don't really have time for it, but at the same time, I want to be, sociable and figure out who it is and stuff. And sometimes I know. Of course, sometimes I don't. But how do you deal with it in that kind of situation?
I get a bit stroppy, actually. I don't have any time for it at all, and I just say, look, either we're going to have a conversation or you can go and play a guessing game with someone else. I just think it's absolute rudeness for people to do that. It's not even funny.
No, it's really not.
Yeah. It's a pet peeve, you see. That's one of my little pet peeves, is the people who play the guessing games. So that's how I deal with it. It probably doesn't bother other people as much as it bothers me. But then there are things that bother other people more. So I guess it's a swings and roundabouts thing.
Yeah, really. It's just I hated it, and I was kind of curious.
And at what point are you in school? Like, how long have you got to go before you leave there?
I'm a senior, which means I'm in my last year, and then I'll graduate and go to college.
What are you going to be doing at college?
I'm either going to major in, like, computer science or something to deal with music or engineering or something like that.
Yeah, I wondered about that. I mean, I thought maybe you would go and do some audio production engineering or something.
Yeah, I'd like to do that.
Yeah.
Because I run the board at my church, and so I definitely have the experience, and I'd be interested to do that kind of thing.
Yes, it's really good when you can combine your interests, and I suppose in your situation, you know, your interests are quite similar to mine in some way. It's nice to be able to combine your interest in computers with the interest in audio production as well.
Yeah, and that's really starting to mingle. Of course, yeah. With me, if I want to integrate my computer with my system, the way things are laid out right now, I have this nice 48-foot-long piece of cable that I string across the house.
What's that for? Is it to integrate the audio on the PC?
That's like if I want to get something directly off the board.
Okay.
To my EQ and compressor and all that, and I want to put it directly to the computer. It, unfortunately, is on the opposite side of the house as my audio stuff is, so I have to have that long cable to hook it up.
Do you find that you're experiencing some frequency loss as a result of a cable that long?
No, I've ran test homes through it and everything, and it's actually pretty good.
Very good. So how do you manage to operate the keyboard, the computer keyboard? Do you have to sort of run and hit record on the SoundForge and then run back, or how does it work?
Yeah, that's what I do for now, but I figure when I get some extra cash and I have nothing better to spend it on, I can get myself a wireless keyboard, and that'll eliminate a lot of that.
Yeah, they are really good, those wireless keyboards. We actually have one. We've set the studio up so that all of the computer equipment's outside it in another room, so that we just have the cordless keyboard in the studio to operate a PC with, but there's no computer equipment in here to make a noise.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
But I know that you still use SFM.
Sorry, I lost you there. Can you repeat that? Are you still with us? Oh no, Earth to Derek. Can you hear me? Oh man. He seems to have gone. Well, that was Derek. I'll just have to disconnect him there and... Oh! Well, what did I do that for? Let's see what we've got here. Okay, I've just done a really ridiculous thing, folks, and that is that I have accidentally disconnected myself. But I don't think I have I? Yes, I must have. Oh, well, there you go, see. That's what the flu... I blame the flu. Absolutely, I do. Got to have something to blame instead of your own incompetence. Okay, there it goes right now. So what I'm going to have to do is just get back online so that we can... finish the program. So why don't I just play your piece of music instead of waffling while I tend to that. And I think that we will, let's see. Oh, I know, since we've been talking about dogs, as we were with the interview earlier, let's play this one from Gilbert O'Sullivan. How about that? We'll come back to the calls in just a second.
Get down, get down, get down. could be. Now I'm just like a cat on a haunted roof. Baby, what do you think you're doing to me? Told you once before, and I won't tell you no more. So get down, get down, get down. You're a bad dog, baby, but I still want you around, around. I still want you around. Yeah. I don't give a damn, and I'd like you if you can. As happy as could be, happy as could be. Now I'm just like a cat on a haunted roof. Baby, what do you think you're doing to me? Told you once before, and I won't tell you no more. So get down, get down, get down. You're a bad dog, baby, but I still want you around, around.
Gilbert O'Sullivan on ACB Radio Mainstream Blindline with Jonathan Mosen, and it's the Get Down song. We are back in business now, after me having cut myself off, which is extremely painful in my condition. Hello there.
I'm back. It cut me too.
Well, yeah, I didn't do that though. That was you that did that. Oh, that was Net2Phone that did that.
Yeah, but I found the line that I can see my time left, so I can warn us when I'm about to go. And I have 2 minutes and 49 seconds to talk to you now.
Oh, man, what can you say in 2 minutes and 49 seconds?
A lot, if well-worded, I guess.
Okay.
And I was going to tell you that we were talking about the computer equipment and that sort of thing.
Yes.
And I was going to mention that I could hear your SoundForge noise reduction artifacts on top of those introduced by the MP3 compression on main menu and that sort of thing.
No, I don't use noise reduction at all.
Oh, you don't?
No. I haven't used it since we had the studio over a year ago.
Well, I was referring to, I think, like some of the earlier.
Oh, sure. Yeah, absolutely sure. Yeah, when we didn't have a studio, I used to use the noise reduction. Yeah.
Yeah, and I found to alleviate most of that, it's you can normalize it after each time you run noise reduction, and that tends to alleviate a lot of the artifacts.
Yes, I experimented with that a lot, and in the early days perhaps didn't fully appreciate that, but I think you're right about that, that normalizing after applying the noise reduction really does help. It's sort of, sometimes you have to play with those things to know what order to do them in.
Yeah, you really do.
Yep. Yeah. Well, I will say goodbye to you in an honourable fashion before you get disconnected. So it's really good to speak with you in person, and I hope we'll keep in touch.
And you have it down to the T, because I only have barely a minute left anyway, so that's cool. And I will definitely keep in touch.
Okay. Thanks, Derek. We'll catch you later.
Sure.
Okay.
All right.
Bye now. Let's go back to the phones on Blindline. Hello there.
Hi, Jonathan. It's David calling from Tamarunui.
Goodness gracious me, what a long way to get in.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
I've tried getting onto using my Net2Phone, but I'm having problems with it. My mic won't take it for some reason.
Oh, man, I hate that.
Yes, I like to talk about, I actually had a bit of sight up until 1990, yeah. And then I lost it. And people still play the guessing game with me at the RSA.
Well, okay. How old were you when you lost your sight?
I was 12 years old.
Okay, so that must have been a major, major thing for somebody just about to be a teenager. So you were fully sighted then?
No, I had sight in my left eye. I was up at home back in those days, so back in the 1980s. And I left home eye in 1998, so.
Okay, just for those who don't know, home eye is the school for the blind in New Zealand. Yeah, okay. And so you still get a bit frustrated with the guessing game as well.
Yes, I do, Jonathan.
Yeah.
And but I can see day and night as well.
Okay.
I can see dark and night, whether it's day and night.
And so if you were offered your eyesight, would you take it?
Yes, I would take it. My dad actually is actually related to a guy named Fred Hollows. I don't know if you've heard of him, but
I certainly have.
People in Africa.
Yes, the Fred Hollows Foundation, of course Fred Hollows is unfortunately no longer with us, but the foundation is doing some fantastic work in developing countries with particularly cataract surgery.
Yes, I heard about that. Yeah, my grandma was a Hollows. She's no longer with us. She went in about 1981. My brother was born.
Right.
Kind of a blow, but it thing goes. Jaw scripts, I don't know if this should be should bring this up, but I'll bring it up anyway. Does anybody have any Jaw scripts for MSN?
Well, Jaws version 4 has it all built in if you want to download that.
I've got the beta demo, but as I told you, I'm still having slight problems with authorization.
Jaws version 4 has MSN Messenger scripts, and they are very good. Also, Jim Snowbarger does some as well on his site, which are excellent.
Jim Snowbarger.
Yeah.
Have we got his? Well, it should be on
the
ICB site anyway, shouldn't it?
I'm not sure, but it's www.snow.com.
It's confusing. You've got 5 W's.
I know it is, isn't it?
Snow.com.
Yeah. www.snow.com. Yeah.
Right. Okay, then, John. Well, I better go. You know, the other is getting very expensive on my end calling from New Zealand. It's a bit weird why we can't call you direct to Whanganui, but hopefully something should be sorted out for our New Zealand listeners.
Isn't technology marvellous that you're only a few kilometres, well, I don't know about a few kilometres, but you're not that far.
Whanganui is probably about 3 hours' drive from Taumanui.
Yeah. And then here you
are. I've been there, but it sounds stupid how I have to call New York just to talk to your blind line.
But it's worth it, though, I'm sure.
No, during the day.
Worth every penny. Yeah, well, nice to hear from you, and we'll catch up with you later, I'm sure.
Okay, then, John, did you get my email yesterday?
Can't remember.
I tried using this MSN Messenger yesterday. And
and I acknowledged that on the radio. I even played your request for you.
Okay, then, yeah, I managed to find the song I was looking for. I found it on Audio Galaxy last night.
Oh, dear. Was it The Tide Is High by Blondie?
No, it was my number one by, I found it by, it was a girl named Princess.
Oh.
1980s track, so. Oh. And with this MSN, like, I went to the first box, it said, request to ACB Radio Interactive with Jonathan Modem.
Modem, yep. Yep, Jonathan Modem.
And then in the next box, it had the next two boxes didn't speak.
No, so because they're edit boxes. You've got an input window where you type, an output window, and you've got another box as well that has, I think, the two field filled in. So you have to type in the input window and read in the output window.
Okay, then. First box is input, second box is output.
No, I think it's the other way around. I think the first box is output and the second one is input. But if you use Jaws 4, it actually tells you which window you're in.
Okay, yeah, I've got to try and get another authorization. I rang Pulse Data and they said you might have to get the full package or something. Anyway, Jonathan, okay. I'd better go. I'd better give you a ring sometime when it's not going to cost me that much.
Well, have a good day.
You too, Jonathan.
Okay, then. Bye now.
Bye.
See, isn't it marvellous? You can call all the way to New York from New Zealand to talk to someone who's also in New Zealand. This is truly marvellous technology. You're listening to ACB Radio Mainstream. The program is Blind Line. The board is free and we are sort of winding down, but we still have a chance to have a conversation with you. And the number, should you care to join us, and I hope you will, is area code 212-812-2800. That's area code 212-812-2800. And then when you're asked to enter a PIN or a conference code, it is 0480-5512. The conference code, again, 0480-5512. We've spoken about some interesting things today, actually. Quite a wide-ranging topic, a wide-ranging conversation we've had, including we've had a chat with Gene Bennett. Jim Layton did that for us. Gene Bennett is from the University of Pennsylvania, and they've been talking about some research they're doing on a dog, in particular one dog called Lancelot that went all the way to Congress and wowed them. He has some vision back in one eye as a result of some gene therapy that's been going on, and they say that maybe in 3 or 5 years they might be ready to try it on humans. We've spoken about whether you would, if you were given the chance, avail yourself of such therapy. We've also talked about the dangers of the way that sometimes blindness is portrayed by people who are involved in prevention, and the risk that perhaps parents of blind children may elect to hang all their hopes on a cure instead of accepting that a blind person can lead a fulfilling life given appropriate guidance and training. So we've spoken about those things. We've talked about, I see that nobody has taken me up on my discussion that I wanted to raise about whether agencies that are involved in the rehabilitation aspect of blindness, in other words, providing blindness-related services, can also really, morally, be involved in the prevention of blindness, because I'm quite adamant that I don't see how they can. I don't see how you can have a rehab agency on the one hand trying to portray blindness as a normal course of events that is no big deal as long as attitudes are good and training is right, and then on the other hand going out there being involved in prevention. I think that's a mixed message, that it's impossible to mix effectively, but so we haven't really talked about that, although I'd like to. And we've spoken a bit about technology today. Interesting call from Nick Zamorelli talking to us about cell phone manufacturers and how they should be doing more. Section 255 of the Telecommunications Act was supposed to help out there in the United States. And we spoke with Jim Fruchterman about this a couple of weeks ago on Main Menu, which we reran last week. Because it doesn't really seem to be working at this stage, at least if there has been any research, any work that's gone on, it doesn't seem to have really trickled down yet to the everyday end consumer of cell phone products. And it seems so easy with the technology that's out there to have cell phones that are more accessible than they currently are. So Nick's decided to make this a bit of a cause, and he's written to Motorola about that. And I'll be interested actually to follow up with him in future weeks to find out whether he's received any sort of reply from Motorola and what their response stated. Could be interesting. Also, next week, a reminder that we will be talking about being a student, and in particular, we'll be talking to Jonathan Simeon from the National Alliance of Blind Students, and we'll be talking to him about that affiliate of ACB and what they're up to, and some of the some of the issues that are facing blind students these days. And I suppose that, you know, some of us might think that it's pretty easy being a student these days when you're blind, because it wasn't that long ago that you had to you had to record your lecture notes and then braille them out afterwards and all of those things. These days you're taking some sort of portable note taker into your class and bashing them out, and it's all pretty cool. In fact, I know somebody who's working on some technology where they're looking at even recording their lectures as MP3 files and seeing if they can get some sort of translation software to deal with it. So I don't know, all sorts of good stuff, but there are other challenges going on as well, so we're going to be talking to Jonathan about those things next week at the normal time, and I'm sure that that'll be an interesting interview. So that's coming up next week, and Blindline will return to the normal time of 9 Eastern, 6 Pacific. That's on a Sunday evening US time, Monday at 1 Universal time, and we'll certainly look forward to your company. Well, it doesn't look like we are going to get another call, so I accept that, and I appreciate those who have phoned in. I found the conversation really quite stimulating today, and it's much appreciated. So we'll go out with a piece of music. Thank you for joining us. Don't forget that there's more stimulating talk here on ACB Radio Mainstream, the talk of the blind community, with Dennis Miller and Miller Time coming your way on Tuesday at 1 Universal. That's Monday evening, 9 Eastern, 6 Pacific. Followed by Marlene Lieberg with Blind Spot, the low-tech, no-tech show. Goody, goody. All coming up. Thank you for your company. I've enjoyed it very much. Hope you have a pleasant day, wherever it is in the world that you are, and we'll go out with a happy little song from Billy Joel. This has been Blindline. It's been a pleasure. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye.